You're listening to the Digital Void Podcast, where we explore digital culture, media, technology, and memes, featuring critical and empowering conversations with experts at the forefront of our digital moment. My name is Josh Chapdelaine, and my co-host is Dr. Jamie Cohen. What is the true potential of AI text-to-video generation? Award-winning games designer and director of Curiouser Institute, Reed Berkowitz, discusses OpenAI's Sora, an AI text-to-video generation model that is set to launch to the public soon. But like all new AI models, it can be difficult to determine hype from reality. In today's conversation, Reed and I discuss Hollywood's AI outlook, from Tyler Perry rolling back an $800 million investment in his Georgia-based studio to DreamWorks co-founder Jeffrey Katzenberg's projection that AI will replace 90% of animation jobs in the coming years. We also explore the limitations of the models and why low-quality AI content might just be the best AI arena to play in today. Now, here's today's conversation with AI games designer Reed Berkowitz. I want to start this conversation, which will mostly be about text-to-video generative AI, with something that you wrote on LinkedIn several days ago that was actually in response to our previous podcast conversation about AI games. You wrote, "Hype is great for selling AI, but it causes outsized expectations and fears. I really think the future in this space is going to be extremely creative." Reed, can you outline what your creative idea for AI is?
I think that there's a fear right now that AI will take over the creative role of humans right now, and that we're going to end up being the ones that sweep the sidewalks, and the AIs are going to write novels and create videos. And I really don't see that happening. I think that, one, AI is very far away from being able to do anything like that. However, I think that it will open up new kinds of creativity that are going to be extremely, extremely fun and imaginative and collaborative with the AIs. So in other words, instead of taking away a writer's job, this is kind of what I was referencing in the other article, instead of taking away a writer's job of writing sort of the dialogue tree of a single character or 20 characters and saying, oh, the AI will be able to write those quips or those barks or those sentences. Instead of that, it'll be a team of writers working to create an entire world of characters that come alive and has no boundaries and has no guardrails. And these writers and creators will be people imagining an entire world that builds a game within the world. And that would just be so creatively fascinating to do, right? And it would take more creatives, and it would be more in collaboration with the AI. And how do you create the different stratifications of the city, and, like, you know, what are the backstories of all these characters, and how can you create backstories that lead to characters, and, you know, just all this fascinating stuff that's going to happen. So we're looking at the creative jobs that are, you know, might be taken away, but we're not looking at the fascinating jobs that are going to occur once we can use AI at a different level. So yes, when AI gets better, we will lose some jobs, but my hope, anyway, and it is a hope because I don't know for certain, is that we're going to unlock just an incredible new world of creativity.
It's my hope that this conversation will help illuminate and dispel some of the fears that you talk about in regards to the job loss, because there's a lot of fear that is specifically in response to OpenAI's launch of Sora, which is currently undergoing red team testing. And OpenAI's Sora is a text-to-video model that OpenAI describes as, quote, "We're teaching AI to understand and simulate the physical world in motion with the goal of training models that help people solve problems that require real-world interaction." So Reed, can you walk us through the types of outputs that Sora has created, and what are the problems being referred to by OpenAI? Are the problems just expensive film and television shoots?
Well, so basically Sora is the new model that has not been released yet to the general public from OpenAI. And they have been teasing us with clips of what it can do, which, of course, is fascinating. And you're right, has definitely generated some fear and anticipation both from the community. And so you can use it to type in text and get a fairly long, cohesive video from it, which you were not previously able to do. And the quality is good. It's not maybe production ready for some things, but it's way above what, you know, where we've seen so far. So the problems that they are alluding to, I don't know, right? But it is going to allow people, and this is just my opinion, it is going to allow people to create short form videos that would probably be similar to what you would get from a clip art section, right? So they're going to be background videos and cars driving down roads, or, you know, a sunset, you know, over an ocean or something like that. One of the criticisms about this, which I really, really like, it's type, I don't usually hold with a lot of AI criticism right now because it tends to be over the top and overly dramatic and fear-based, but this one by Owen Fern, and he's an animator. There was a video of Sora that's of a fuzzy little character, you know, looking at a candle, and sort of like Pixar thing, and everybody found that video to be incredibly awe-inspiring because you could generate a Pixar video basically with just a few sentences. And this animator took it apart and said, well, here's the problem. In production, you need to do things that change the eyes. The eyes aren't looking at the flame here. The fingers change from 3 to 4. This is not a cute expression on these 5 frames, or his tail should be doing this, right? And when you look at all those things, you can see the difference between a Pixar movie and this clip. They're not even close. They're not comparable. But that's not the problem. The problem is that you can't fix them. So you have to re-roll the whole clip, and then it's a different monster and a different candle and a whole different scene. So you can never sort of like add in the human elements back into the art.
In reference to that clip in particular, one of the most common responses to the very good faith criticism is that a general audience or a major studio like Netflix will say, yeah, but we're not trying to be a Pixar. We're just trying to put out something low budget, general entertainment to watch. Do you think that people intuitively will understand or care if the reflection in an eye is as perfect as a Pixar film? Do you think that will rub people the wrong way and that people will feel something subtly off? Or do you think that major studios will be able to release this type of content and there's a market for it?
No, major studios will not be able to release this type of content. And yes, people will notice it. That is why Pixar only like has this market share, right? Because of its consummate professionalism. And yes, people notice when the expression on the face of a character is off. And they notice it probably more easily than anything else. So that artistry, right? That is what sells Pixar. It's quality. And you can just, you know, if you're a hard, cold economist, you can just look at the market and say, wow, they have to keep hiring amazing people to work there and do this work. And it takes a very long time. And yet they are successful. And when people don't put in that work, they are not as successful. So that is clearly going to continue, because that's just human nature. We can tell when a character is really cute and fuzzy and lovable, and when it's kind of weird and the fingers are melting and, you know, it's something's off. However, I don't think that we're at the phase where people, I don't know if people really do or not, but we're not at the phase where Sora is going to take over, you know, the jobs of talented animators. What it's going to take over are the jobs of, you know, hacks. This is like some ways where it's not nearly as bad as where we are with image generation, right? Like right now, people, you know, it's definitely taking over the jobs of people who use stock photography or Unsplash, right? I haven't paid for a subscription to a stock photography place in a long time. However, video is not there yet, even Sora. And I guess if you are really good at cobbling together and want to roll the dice a lot and have a video in mind where the characters don't stay the same from clip to clip. You could probably put together a pretty cool little montage if you're, I don't know, advertising some kind of new gadget or maybe a medicine. Like they select ad with some people walking across the beach far away very fast. Yeah, maybe you get away with it. It's B-roll material.
It's the same thing that I intuitively felt while watching these clips, that these were cute and B-roll stock footage quality at best right now, and understanding that these models will grow over time and be more intuitive and improve in quality. We're in early stages, but the headlines and the quotes from major executives around Hollywood have been driving a lot of this fear. So I want to highlight two and get your thoughts on them in particular. The former chairman of Walt Disney Studios and co-founder of DreamWorks Animation, Jeffrey Katzenberg, recently predicted generative AI will replace up to 90% of film animation jobs. Additionally, Tyler Perry announced plans to pause his $800 million Atlanta studio expansion due to AI technology. In our last conversation, you suggested that more writers will be necessary to design AI game systems that then design games in order to help them run efficiently, intuitively, and creatively. So are Katzenberg and Perry totally misguided? And if so, how? Or is film and television a totally separate arena than games?
A little bit of both. I mean, I think that definitely it's a separate arena. A movie is linear. I mean, you could create a movie with lots of choices or options, but then it becomes a game, right? It's not what we would traditionally call movies. So they are in some ways in a more precarious position because if AI can generate things in the manner that people fear, it would kind of eat into that business. Or let's just say it this way, you wouldn't need as many people to create a video or a movie, though more people could create one, right? So it opens it up horizontally instead of vertically, right? If you're a grip or something, you might be worried. However, if you're a teenager who's watching this, you might get excited, right? Because now these tools might be something you can express yourself with. So, but one, I don't think we're there yet. I think the idea of canceling a studio expansion because of this is unusual. I struggle to imagine why that would be because, unless you are producing B-roll footage, like that's your studio is like, oh, we're going to take over the video space for stock video. Sure. I would have some trepidation, but an actual studio, no, I don't see this happening anytime in the near future. Now, the question of will AI take over regular studio work, which I think is like the big question, right? And I think that comes from this terrifying trajectory of seeing it go from not good to good in like a day. And you're like, oh my God, imagine what it's going to be like next month and the month after that and the month after that. So you can't help but project out this like logarithmic curve just skyrocketing into like, well, that's it. You're going to say, make me a cool movie about a robot boy, and then boom, it's going to be done. Everybody go home. Not only are we miles away from that, there's probably a lot of invisible walls there that make that impossible with current technology. And I think we're going to have to like loop. We're eating up a lot of ground now with the technology that we have to create generative AI products. But I think there's missing pieces that we're going to run into that we have to go back and figure out. And they're going to take time. They're going to be hard, just like before this happened, right? So I think it's a plateau that we're rushing straight across, and eventually we're going to hit the other side and be like, oh, now we gotta, oh yeah, okay, we gotta have some kind of world grounding, we gotta have some kind of whatever. In some ways, I think in terms of generative AI eating the lunch of larger studios, I think that to address the problem I talked about before about the fact that you can't art direct this stuff, there's going to have to be some way to do that. And I don't see AI as getting smart enough to do that, certainly not in the near term, but maybe not for a long time, right? I won't say never. I wanted to, but I know that's not something you can say about AI. But I do feel like, you're not just going to be able to look at it and be like, okay, tilt the eyes slightly more, slightly do this. And now she has a smile. Let's go to the next scene and she's holding a candle and she's wearing this red thing. Because creating through text alone is just feels impossible, right? If you've ever done art direction, right? you have to have your hands on it. You've got to actually move the eye. You've got to see it. Just relying on the computer to do that seems so far-fetched, and yet, it could happen. And I guess if you just push the curve all the way to the edge, it will happen. But I think before that happens, there'll be all kinds of technologies that fill in to give the art director a chance. Like, for instance, creating 3D objects in Unreal and metahuman faces that animate on video is far more likely to create an interesting, realistic video in the midterm future, like 5 to 10 years from now, where you can actually move the characters around in a scene and then use the AI to help animate and do things and have it look very realistic and do special effects. That stuff seems very possible. And that could actually be used in production because we already use heavy 3D effects in production very successfully. I think what Adobe's doing will eat into production because they have AI tools that aren't just pure generative, but they can change the sound quality or steal color palettes from other videos or images. And all that stuff is very time consuming, and they're using it very smartly to boost the creative process of individuals and give them their time back sort of by using AI. And I think the other thing that is probably seems like a fruitful area is that something like Animate Diff or any of these LoRAs that use some kind of base model to start with. So Animate Diff, you can grab a cheap video and then you can use Animate Diff to create visual effects over that video. So if you want the person in the video to look a different way or do a different thing, you can just have the actress do it. Or you can add in like cheap effects that become really cool looking effects once you apply the AI to it. And therefore, you've got the art direction ability and you've got the AI working together, but you can do that iterative process. And that's the thing that all AI generation is really missing right now in any kind of long form or linear thing, is that iterative process, that art direction that happens in every commercial project. So,
and I think what studios are really, and especially the executives, are thinking, okay, film production costs have skyrocketed. The major blockbusters are now routinely exceeding $200 million in budget before print and advertising. And I think they're looking at generative AI models and saying, oh my gosh, we're going to be able to skip over so many layers of the production process. But as you and I have talked about off camera, it's not exactly cheap to develop and maintain LLMs. It's incredibly expensive. Can you talk about the expenses associated with creating, developing, and maintaining and growing a quality LLM?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone down a lot, but there's a reason why Sam Altman is investing in hardware. These things, in order to be at the level that they're not even at the level they need to be. So you can imagine how much money they're spending on Sora right now. LLMs like Claude 3 just came out, and things like this are prohibitively expensive just to create, and then to run, they're expensive. So I will put aside that smaller, more local LLMs are really becoming a thing now, and they're hot and they're amazing, and I love them. And the time it takes to fine tune them is going down, and run them is going down. They're getting more efficient, but there's always going to be a benchmark that's higher, and to get those, it's just wow. It takes hundreds of millions of dollars to make them, and running them is not cheap either. Just text, right? So video is in a whole other layer. But I do think that will go down. It will go down once it goes up, right? You got to hit a certain benchmark, and then people will figure out how to make it cheaper.
Yeah. And I think that's where this conversation is really interesting. It's the AI experts like yourself who are able to figure out that there's a lot of hype that is being discussed that is leading to direct harm, right? An $800 million investment in the Atlanta area is a huge investment. It provides jobs, it provides infrastructure, it provides stability. And that is gone based off the idea of hype. Now, it could just be an excuse. Maybe Perry was looking for an out to not spend that money anyway, right? Maybe he was noticing signs of Hollywood and that he didn't like, and he took the opportunity for an earned media hit. But You know, it's interesting because the things that we've actually seen so far that have been produced are, I would say, right in line with what you described. They're stock footage, B-roll quality. But I'm curious about the potentials, right? If it's truly the case, like you said, that audiences will be unresponsive to, and I think we've seen evidence of preliminary audience backlash to something as simple as the intro to Marvel's Secret Invasion series using generative AI in its opening sequence. And there was a lot of pushback that it didn't look great, and there was pushback that there were very few artists, if any, involved in that. So if we're looking at the outputs, even in the early stages, I want to highlight a case study that was circulating earlier this week. Bill Peebles, a research lead at Sora, shared a Sora-generated video based on the prompt, "An alien blending in naturally with New York City, paranoia thriller style, 35mm film," on the platform formerly known as Twitter. We've linked to it in the show notes. It captured the imagination of many, including director of machine intelligence innovation at Diversified, Blaine Brown, who transformed the video into the alien lip-syncing a rap song. It's all in the spirit of play, but is this the example of creativity that people are excited about? Other different use cases that you as a games designer think are more interesting and captivating?
Yeah, I think it's going to enter into a golden age of video memes. I mean, it's fun and it's easy and it's creative. So I'm looking forward to that myself. Yeah, I was just looking at that. Actually, I had that tab up when I was talking earlier. And that's hilarious. I mean, it's great. I think that comedy and memes are going to be a good thing because they're short. People don't care about the quality. In fact, it's almost a detriment if it's too overproduced. I mean, just like drawn memes, right? We like the crunchy faces and all that stuff. We're not really looking for Picasso. So I think that, you know, short form videos and stuff like that would be great. I think B-roll, YouTube style things, TikTok stuff, that's going to be where I would imagine it's going to start and be prevalent, and where people can exercise their creativity, because so many people will have access to it that you just can't help but expect some cool experiments to come from it. I mean, we've seen some things like the Peter Gabriel video that got passed around. It was like a little kind of like a contesty sort of thing where they created a video to his Panopticon. I know that some other artists, I want to say Madonna, is using it for backgrounds in her live shows. And it wasn't just to have an AI video. Like it was because they tried doing something with 3D, and she didn't like it. So it's like, what else can we do? Like, and they went in that direction. So great. It's got its own aesthetic, and it's right now because it's still a little bit wonky. You know, a lot of times you can tell it's generated, but it's a palette, and if you want that look, right, you can grab it. So I think that we're gonna see it creeping in. It's not gonna just like slam everything and take over, right? You know, but and then the models will get better, and I think that it won't. Okay, this is like a big reach, but I don't think it will be like Sora right away that takes over. I almost think it'll be more the open source, smaller programs that are kind of using Sora or using other things as their base, like the GamDiff and Comfy UI style, you know, amalgams. That
can you explain those?
Yeah, those are programs that use, some of them can create text to video like Runway ML or something like that, but a lot of them use video as a base and alter the video or the animations or whatever you're using as a base to create effects. So animation effects. So if you have somebody walking down the road, you can turn them into an anime, right? They have different styles. So I feel like, you know, those are just going to be cheaper and be more varied and are going to fall into the hands of more hackers, creative people, and so on. And they're just more, again, there's more human elements in it. There's more ways to art direct. There's more ways to get creative with it. So just the vast number of people that will have access to those versus Sora, which is going to be expensive and, you know, so on. I think we'll see a lot coming from there. But I do think it's going to creep up slowly. I don't think it's going to just be like, Sora's announcing it's the end of the production video. You know, why make an ad with her? Because like it does have a look to it. It does have a very distinctive style right now, and it is, you know, it's like when Photoshop first came out. You could tell, like, oh, that's the lens
Damn
flare
overlay and luminosity. Everyone uses it.
effect.
Everyone. Doesn't make photos look that great. I mean, it's interesting to me because there's a big contrast between the higher quality aesthetic sensibility and almost genre-defining style of OpenAI Sora. And what you believe is going to be the best route forward, which you've said is lower quality images. Can you explain why lower quality images might be a better route?
I think lower quality images in two ways. One, as a base for AI, so you can quickly make a quick animation in any animation tool or crappy video on your iPhone or something like that, and then use AI to enhance it and make it whatever you want. But also, I think memifying it, you know, that's the aesthetic of memes, and the Will Smith eating spaghetti thing is. You know, is viral because it's so crazy looking and weird, and I think that I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue. Like that, it just seems like it's fun, it's fast, it's useful, it's perishable. There's no reason to like spend your life crafting that meme. Though apologies to the hardcore meme makers out there who, you know, been working 2 months on their meme.
Yeah, I mean, it might be because of our individual and collective rabbit holes that we share online. But it's funny that you mentioned the Will Smith eating spaghetti meme because it was updated this year to show the evolution of generative AI. But when I think about the cases of image and video-based AI, it's the Will Smith eating spaghetti meme, it's the Balenciaga Pope, it is all of these really highly mimetic images. And then there are just one or two nefarious cases, like the ongoing, I think there's a lawsuit right now about the Biden AI robocall in the New Hampshire primary that was created. And so it's like there's either this Hollywood mainstream hype narrative, or there are these fun, memeable, highly digital, potential security misinformation campaigns being launched. And then in the middle, there are all these low fidelity, fun, creative possibilities and potentials. And this is a different type of conversation that we've had today because it's based not on an article that you've written, but based on the ongoing evolution of a narrative. But in a way, I'm curious, how should people talk to their friends and family about this type of text-to-video AI? I think that's an interesting place to close.
Yeah, well, one, it's a miracle, really. That's really at my heart. I'm like, I can't believe we can do this, right? And I think that's like a celebration of human accomplishments and just technology. And it's just so fun and cool and science fiction. So I start there and I'm like, can you believe we can do this? And then, of course, like, okay, yeah, but you're stealing everybody's video and you're putting, you know, a lot of work. And I'm like, you know, I think that's the first thing blowback that I get when I start talking about it. I would say we're not there yet. It's not going to happen in the near future, regardless of the hype. And it's going to empower creative people to make more stuff. The AI is very, very long way away from being able to move people in this way that a human artist can. And I think for a long time, I don't know what long is. And I don't mean to just kick it down the road, but we're going to have a lot of fun making memes and putting together video projects and yes, narrative projects as well that we can cobble together. And they're going to surprise people. They're going to surprise me with how cool they are that I didn't expect them. And we're alive in this time where it's just really exciting. I just hope people look at the excitement of it. And that's not to say that there won't be issues down the road. But we're living in this sweet spot right now where we're ordinary people are just being given these amazing tools, right? And we're going to create some pretty cool stuff with them. before we become enslaved.
What an optimistic note to end on. And in closing, Reed, is there a Reed Berkowitz or Curious or Institute LLM that we can plug into to talk to you?
No, there's not.
We need to train a model on your writing and your thinking so that we preserve this.
I feel like the LLMs are going to train me how to speak differently.
Reed, thank you so much for your time. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Josh. Always a pleasure.